Zero. The part that is the end and the beginning. The silence was calling me. I was called by a silence. And I could only smile with a slight surprise, because why now? Why was it calling me on this dreary Sunday evening? A Sunday after 3 days of coping with the flu, a Sunday when I had not been able to leave the house, it was too cold and I kept sneezing, a Sunday full of small inconveniences, dust everywhere and I kept sneezing, a sink that no longer drained, a forgotten ingredient that led to the recipe being slightly off. One of those days. Still, at the end of that day, I heard the silence calling, very clearly. If a sound attracts you, you can move accordingly and follow its sonic trail. But how to move when it's a silence that is announcing itself? I tilted my head so that my right ear focused a little more upward, but it wasn't there. I walked out onto the balcony, feeling the clammy concrete pull through my socks. My eyes searched the sky between the clothesline looking for a sign. There was nothing showing. And the silence was still calling. It took me a while to understand that I didn't have to go anywhere. Back in the bedroom, under the blankets, I realized no action was needed. The silence was there and sounded wonderful. Hey, I thought you would never arrive here. I savored this moment and waited a while longer, and a while longer than that, before picking up the book from the nightstand. The title on the ocean blue cover had been staring at me for a long time. Other planes of there.
Across the mountain and through the seas, past the moon, beyond all things that we've dreamed about. You never in your life seen such color that glows like a twinkle in an eye.
One, 2 points. There are 2 points, and they are incompatible. At least, they seem to not tolerate each other. In the form that they take at the moment. We are so used to binaries, two possible values. Binary, being in one of two mutual exclusive states. A lamp is switched on or off. You are moving or standing still. It is day or night. One, zero, true, false, either, or. Of course, some positions accept twilight zones, where one merges into the other. That's where we find the golden hour, or a lamp that turns out to be equipped with a dimmer. Yet we do not say that it is simultaneously day and night, or that I am standing still and am also moving. And at the same time, I now say, I am standing still and I am moving. I am standing still because I did not want to walk away from two possibilities that did not seem to fit into one place. I am standing still with some confusion, eyes widening and lips pressed together because there is no logical solution to communicate. No fight, no flight. I am standing still and I have been standing here for a while now. I'm starting to get used to this, and even find it kind of interesting. What will happen if I don't leave, don't choose, don't resolve? I went through all my options, and standing still seems to be the best. I am standing still, and it becomes uncomfortable. What is she standing over there? Can she move on with her life? People bump into me or just gently pull at my sleeve. I get distracted by that which looks more exciting and enticing than my current impasse. Life speeding past me, full of social interactions. I'm thrilled to announce announcements and public updates without any question marks. I get distracted, I seek distraction, but somehow I persevere. Staring. A staring contest is a contest in which two people stare into each other's eyes until one of the two blinks, smiles, or looks away. The first person to do this loses the contest. There are a number of ways to increase your chances of winning, such as by developing techniques to keep your eyes moist or to distract your opponent. In the apparent immobility of standing still, cracks begin to appear. They are only small stirrings, like the corner of a mouth curling, an eyelash that flickers. Not only she is starting to quiver, the two points, or let's call them possibilities, are moving as well. She looks at them more closely and sees their first vibrations appearing. They too are not going to last forever. Her eyes often blink. In general, they do so, above average. When she happens to see a video recording of herself, she often thinks, "What a restlessness! Where is all that commotion coming from?" Staring contests are a serious challenge for her. Sure, her body can stand still as a mountain, but it's usually the face where eruptions start, and where deep-rooted information is revealed in uncontrollable ways. They are still standing still. As she zooms in on the situation where not much is happening, time begins to slow down. She didn't expect they would hold on that long, yet this is stretching out towards an eternity. How do you measure a shift? Training. Sequences of actions where each step should flow effortlessly into the next often led to hiccups. Whether it was the run-up to a basketball hoop or a range of handicraft skills, she generally stopped midway, faltering at the moment she started to think about the action. Her mind then brought the body to a standstill. So yes, she had reasons to doubt when a friend invited her to join him for an archery session. He went almost every weekend to an archery club on the outskirts of Berlin called Jäger und Sammler, and had even purchased his own bow. His enthusiasm and her curiosity about an act that requires building tension and releasing it won her over in the end. It felt cozily German on a sunny Sunday morning, the autumn leaves bright red, coffee at the wooden picnic table. So this is where people gathered to shoot arrows together. There was something funny about it, although she sensed a pressure. Today she was not going to run away or stay on the sidelines watching, but also shoot arrows herself, and that felt less funny. Fortunately, she got introduced to an instructor who was in no hurry. He believed in an intuitive style of archery. Intuition doesn't fall from the sky, it is grounded. Hence, the ground was their starting point. Was she standing firmly on both feet? Yes, now she was. After all, she had traveled to Berlin to get more grounded again, after feeling increasingly wobbly for a period of time, as if the slightest breeze would knock her over. That was no longer the case now. Over the past weeks, she had done her daily stretches, her long walks through the city, her short solitary dances in the living room, and by now the ground had returned. "Okay," said the instructor. "Then we can slowly go through the other steps. You practice dry first, without a bow or arrow, to learn the movement. But eventually, it comes down to this. Take the bow in the left hand. In preparation, always pointing down. Place the arrow, with the bowstring in the notch at the arrow's feathered top. Bend three fingers with space for the string in the crease of the second phalanx." This is where her mind was already starting to falter. Three fingers, two phalanges. "Stretch out the left arm straight ahead while the right arm hooks back. Extend the string further and further towards you until your hand can position itself around the jawline. Then you reach a moment of building tension. At its peak, you let go. You hardly need to look at the target. If you perform all these steps carefully, each arrow will end up more or less in the same direction. That's what we call consistency." After exercising a few times on the beginner's range, and indeed seeing her arrows always landing in the upper right corner of the circular target, she started to understand the joy of having a clear aim. The preparation, the moment of building tension with full concentration, and then zoof, going straight for the target. It was a new experience, since she considered herself rather a practitioner of the eternal detour, or of one step forward, two steps back, and then observing the situation a bit. She joined her friend on the parkour, where he was aiming for a rubber deer that was strategically placed behind the trees, and quipped to him, "Even though I know little about soccer, I've felt for years that I train more or less simultaneously for all the roles on the team. A bit of attacking, a bit of defending, but I don't mind goalkeeping either. It is a grand preparation. I feel more and more that I am becoming the whole field. Still, I highly doubt if I will ever score a goal."
If I could take you away to a better day, oh how our love would turn out okay. And if you just listen to me, just you and me.
4. Stretching out in Bootsy's rubber band. Out of a cloud of smoke and a pearl-gray foggy background rises a motorcycle with silver shiny handlebars, chopper style. The motorcycle rides right up to you. The light from the headlamp resonates with other light flashes. On the motorcycle sits a broadly smiling man with a short afro, dressed in a white suit with golden embellishment. On his forehead rests a pair of mirrored sunglasses with star-shaped lenses, reflecting like the motorbike's chrome. While his hands are on the handlebars, he carries a white bass guitar on his lap, again in the shape of a star. Where did he come from and where is he riding to? In any case, he is riding into the future, with pleasure, and in a way that silences any criticism. Above him, in sharp contrast to this almost mythical image shrouded in clouds, is written in rainbow-colored capitals, stretching out in Bootsy's rubber band. This is bass guitarist and singer Bootsy Collins, and this is the cover of his first solo record from 1976. A record is primarily a carrier of music, but a record is just as much a carrier of an idea, an image, an attitude. Without a sound playing, we can hear Bootsy already before opening up the record sleeve. It is the triumphant attitude of him on the motorbike combined with the words stretching out that makes this image so appealing. Stretching out. Stretching out is an alteration of that which is already there. It dares to question the thinking of this is just the way things are. No, this is not just the way things are. What if we start stretching them out? What if we start stretching ourselves? Stretching is the opposite of shrinking, of making small, of staying boxed in. Stretching does not close, it opens. After stretching, it is possible to spring back into the original shape, like a rubber band. But in the meantime, something has changed. There has been a shift. And yet, stretching out doesn't happen as easily to everyone. For those whose shoulders are usually somewhat hunched, for those minds who think more often about what still needs to be done instead of what can be done, for those who turn quickly into problem solvers instead of the possibility welcomers, for those and some others, a reminder might be needed. And that Bootsy Collins record is such a reminder. The image of him on a motorcycle, a record sleeve from 1976, is only a small fragment of a much larger constellation. Or as Bootsy sings here himself, I'm just another point of view. We're on a side path now, because the main story is that in the same time period, Bootsy Collins was a core member of Parliament Funkadelic, two legendary bands led by George Clinton. He was there, at the center of the P-Funk universe, playing his star-shaped bass on the one, alongside people like Bernie Worrell, Eddie Hazel, and Maceo Parker. He was a part of an exceptional structure that would change the course of music. We can zoom out to a greater extent to see a bigger picture, and then we notice a little more back in time an 18-year-old Bootsy playing in James Brown's band, the original JB's, never missing a beat. And some decades further in time, we can hear his music being sampled by Dr. Dre, defining the hip-hop sound of the American West Coast during the 1990s. But for now, let's stick to the 70s, the time period of stretching out and the heyday of P-Funk. The term world-building might be trending in contemporary art speak these days, but in the 70s, a whole world was coming into fruition and it was built by George Clinton and affiliated musicians and artists. It was a black utopia, Just like the music and poetry of Sun Ra or the writing of Octavia Butler, P-Funk proposed a world where black people would move into space, leaving the grim inequality and violence at planet Earth far behind them. Free your mind and your ass will follow, the kingdom of heaven is within. Open up your funky mind and you can fly, proclaimed these funketeers, while they were establishing one nation under a groove. Once that world comes into being, and its message is spread through concerts, records, top 10 hit songs and radio broadcasts worldwide, people will be affected in the most unexpected places, including people who are not primarily addressed. They too feel the presence of a brain and notice they're living in a placebo syndrome. When encountering P-Funk in all its glory and complexity, there can be a sense of a too muchness, even if it's too much of a good thing. And guitars, and drums, and horns, and keys, and bass, and lead vocals, and background vocals, and the far-out mythology, and humor, and satire, and the revolutionary message, and sexy, and goofy, and comical, and wild, and rock and roll, and gospel, and the beauty, and the ugliness, and Starchild, and Dr. Funkenstein, and Sir Nose, and Casper the Funky Ghost, and the Mothership. In the psychedelic funk cosmology, there is no emptiness, no open space to be seen or heard. But emptiness and abundance have something in common. Both are difficult to frame, to grasp. They challenge containment. They are liberating. Five, shift. How to draw a shift. Take a pastel crayon, choose the deepest hue of crimson you can find. Draw a looping line that is both recognizable as a form and an opening to new forms. Trace the line with your finger and blend the dust of the crayon into the paper to soften edges. Add yellow sparks for energy and blue clouds for balance. Six, begin again. Some of my favorite works of art, the ones that spoke to me from the moment our pathways crossed, refuse to choose. They are oral and visual, music and image. We can stand still and move along with them. Last year, I encountered for the first time import/export Funk Office, a work by Renee Green that she developed in 1992. This installation was presented as part of a major retrospective of her at KW in Berlin, a show of abundant precision, where each work felt like an elaborate exhibition in itself. In one of the largest rooms stood an arrangement that at first sight reminded me of a library or an educational setting. A structure of metal shelves carried a selection of books and magazines. I recognized the source of the early 1990s and issues of Spex magazine. Other shelves contained videotapes and cassette tapes, De La Soul is Dead, EPMD's Unfinished Business. A monitor was playing long interviews of the artist in conversation with musicians, writers and DJs, talking about hip-hop subculture. Along the wall, four funk stations were placed, I would consider them as some type of listening booths, comparable to the spot where you can pre-listen to a record in a record store. These funk stations were each equipped with matte silver iPods, which reminded me of yet another decade, and plastic multi-folders. I put on the headphones and listened to the playlist. 1992 was a few years before the time when I started listening more consciously to music. Yet I was familiar with all the hip-hop songs I heard coming by on the iPod now. That effect of instant recognition, a reactivation of memories and emotions that music can evoke so strongly, was there, making it impossible to stand still, my head nodding to the rhythm. I wondered what the young student at my neighboring listening booth would hear at the same moment and how she would respond. My hands, meanwhile, were flipping through the plastic folders. They contained photographs and notes by Renee Green, such as a black and white picture of a typewriter, with the following text on the paper sticking out. The idea of this project originated during a four-day stay in the then phoneless apartment of Diedrich Diedrichsen. I was having a writing deadline, but kept getting distracted by watching MTV Europe and browsing through Diedrich's vast collection of books and records. He had quite an interesting collection of books on black culture, she typed. Import-Export Funk Office is a work about that peculiar journey, how music culture of the black diaspora from the US travels to Europe, where it is admired and modified by often white audiences. By listeners and cultural producers, and I've been one of those myself, who in their lived experience have very little in common with the origins of this music culture. German cultural theorist Diedrich Diedrichsen was at the time editor of the music magazine Spex. When Green stayed in his home, she discovered that his record and book collection was full of material related to her own African-American background. Diedrichsen and Green became friends. They exchanged and are still exchanging. Import-Export Funk Office can be viewed as a critical commentary on cultural appropriation. It raises questions such as why and how to be together in this zone of transaction. The artist is not giving a conclusive answer. Instead, she offers an office that is not only embodying a critique, but also a reflection on a generative cultural exchange, where it's still possible to feel excitement about collecting music and listening to songs that might be familiar or not on different levels. Levels of experience, of belonging, of resonance. It's not one position or the other. It's able to be and do both. And a few days later, I visited a parallel exhibition by Renee Green in Berlin at Dad Gallery. As I waited outside in the autumn wind for my company, I listened to the sound work installed above the doorway that was mingling with the noises of the street. A male voice repeating, each time more commanding, "Begin again, begin again, begin again, begin again, begin again." Back home a few weeks later, I ordered her book of essays from between 1981 and 2010. When on a dreary Sunday evening, a silence was calling me, I felt it was time to pick up the book from the nightstand. The title on the ocean blue cover had been staring at me for a long time, "Other Planes of There." Initially, Renee Green's writing didn't quite struck me in the way I had hoped for. But by now I understand better why. Her thinking doesn't close. It opens. There is rarely a singular conclusion and rarely a reduction. It starts with stretching out.